Hey everyone, welcome to the Naughty Shaman Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Carlisle, and I can't wait to dive in to a world where the sacred meets the wild and keeps things totally real. In each episode, we are going to dive into what it truly means to live a radiant life that is unapologetically real. And if you're ready to get started, so am I. Hey everybody, it is Natalie coming at you live from the dining room table. And I love making these podcasts because when I do, I always imagine that all of you beautiful luminous warriors are kind of hanging out in one of your favorite places, maybe driving in your car. And I of course imagine that you're sitting right here around my dining room table and we are just chatting and exploring wonderful ideas about spiritual growth and keeping it real. And tonight, I want to tell you a story. This is a story from the Natalie Vault of Stories. I have so many stories, but this one has been on my mind, and it is the story of an octopus. Once upon a time, this is a true story, by the way, but once upon a time, I vacationed in Key West, Florida quite a bit. I love islands. I love the ocean. And especially islands have always spoken to me and my family and have always been a place of healing for me. St. John, St. Croix, the Virgin Islands, Hawaii, Kauai, Manhattan even in some ways. So many different islands have I come to know and love. And Key West was always a special place for me. And it actually wasn't Key West proper that held the most magic for me. It was an island about 45 minutes north of there called Bahia Honda, or Big Pine Key. And Big Pine Key is the national park down there in the Florida Keys. And there's a beautiful campground, and the beaches many years ago were named some of the most beautiful beaches in the world. They were ranked in the top 10 most beautiful beaches in the world because of the deep, white, cushy sand. And it was a very natural beach with natural algal reefs and seagrasses that would wash up on the shore, and miles of white sandbars and little algal reef coves and nooks and crannies and tide pools and so many things to explore. So after, you know, many years of traveling there with friends, I continued to travel there solo and would spend a week or two camping on Bahia Honda. And I'll never forget this one day. I was camping and I woke up at sunrise because it gets hot there early. And it's like 80 degrees at sunrise. As soon as the sun crawls up out of the sea, it's hot. And I love that. And so I was, you know, crawled out of my tent. And I was already sweating hot. And I walked over to this little cove where there's this beautiful hook-shaped algal reef that creates this cove. And as the tide recedes, it goes to the ebb tide to when the tide is falling or getting to low tide, these beautiful tide pools would come up with fish and sea urchins and all sorts of things to explore. Lots of starfish, too. And one time at sunrise, I happened upon a tide pool that had an octopus in it. It was just an Atlantic octopus, and it was nestled in this beautiful little tide pool, and it was all by itself, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then I thought, oh, he's going to figure out that he's not in the ocean anymore and that he's in this tide pool that is quickly drying up because of the heat. As the sun continues to rise, it was getting hotter and hotter. And it was obvious to me, at least standing from where I stood, that the water would soon evaporate, leaving this tide pool dry and vacant, full of dried up seagrass and dried up snails waiting for the flow tide to come. And I thought, little octopus, you got to get yourself back into the ocean. And the ocean was maybe about a foot away. So this tide pool wasn't huge. It was just a tiny tide pool. And he was like a foot away from the great big blue ocean right there. And I started to get concerned because he was not figuring out that his salvation was literally 1 foot away. And so I took it upon myself to be the good Samaritan of octopi, and save this beautiful octopus from his certain doom. So I thought I was a smart person. So I'm thinking, okay, I know about octopus, and I know that they have these sharp beaks hidden underneath their soft, squishy bits. And so I am not going to touch this octopus with my hand. I'm going to get some sticks and I'm going to try to just gently lift this guy about a foot back into the ocean where he'll be cool and safe and be able to live out his long, beautiful life as an octopi. And so I got some sticks and I'm telling you, that octopus schooled me. He was like, and these little sucker legs came out of nowhere and thwapped up into my arms and my hand got sucked down into his guts and I thought I might lose a finger in that beak and I was scared and he was scared and he's snapping the sticks. He's like making a joke of this whole rescue scenario. And so we're kind of battling it out and I'm like, will you just get into the ocean? You're just, come on, save yourself. Let's get into the ocean. You've got to get saved. And so now I'm using my hands and I'm trying to literally pick up an octopus with my bare hands and save him because now it's hot. And we've been at it for like 20 minutes and this guy is not budging. With every effort, he is receding deeper into these different nooks and crannies in this tide pool and he's darting around and lashing out at me. And the whole time, the cells on his skin that camouflage him are flashing from red to gray to brown to blend in with the tide pool so maybe I won't see him anymore. And then red to let me know that I'm angry and he squirted ink in my eyes even and I couldn't even see. And I was just like, oh my gosh, will you just get into the ocean? And I was committed and it was stressful and he was flashing these colors and making all this Herculean effort. And the more I tried to save this octopus, the stronger his connection to the tide pool became. And he was so committed to staying in this tide pool, I couldn't believe it. And I still, even then, wrestled with this thing. And he was flashing and cranky until eventually he stopped fighting. And he turned a pale, pale gray. And I stopped because I hadn't seen this color before, this pale gray color. He hadn't flashed this color before. It was new. And it got my attention. And that he had stopped fighting made me nervous. And I watched for the first time with just a gentle, compassionate observing. And I could see, you know, his cardiovascular system pumping and thumping and his breath pumping, thumping. He was exhausted. And it occurred to me that in my attempts to rescue this octopus, I damn near killed him. In my attempts to rescue him, I was harming him and causing a significant amount of stress because he did not want to leave the tide pool. And I sat on the edge of this reef and we just sat there side by side and breathed. And I remember getting really emotional and starting to cry because there was something about his fierce commitment to stay in this tide pool where he would certainly face difficulties, if not death. And he didn't want to leave. And I started to think about all the effort that I had put into the rescue. And I started thinking about some of the people in my life. And I started to question, have I been trying to save people who do not want to be saved? There are people, my friends, and this is a hard thing for those of us with big fat hearts, and I know you're one of them, that there are people, beautiful, wonderful, talented people who deserve our love that are very committed to their suffering. They're very committed to their tide pool where it's going to get hot and uncomfortable and they're going to be cranky and they're going to get dried out and they might experience harm in some way. And they want to stay there. And when we try valiantly with our superhero capes on to rescue, we actually end up becoming what I would call the bully. We bully them into living their life in a way that we see that they should be. And it's that judgment and those somewhat forceful and aggressive rescue attempts that can end up leaving the one in the tide pool feeling attacked and depleted. And I really had to rethink what on earth I was doing on this planet. Because there have been so many examples through my life where people were suffering or depressed. You know, I think of sometimes my family of origin. My mother was one of the generation that suffered from a lot of misdiagnosis around mental illness and didn't get diagnosed with depression until very late in her life. And she wrestled, and I wanted to save. And I made Herculean efforts to change her, show her a new way of thinking, of being, of exercising, of eating, of living, of doing and being the way I wanted her to be. And I think in that moment on the tide pool, I realized that in those efforts weren't so much about saving them as much as they were about making me feel good about me. And I realized how selfish it was for me to try to rescue this octopus in a tide pool. And it gave me a very brutal lesson in allowing others to be exactly who they are. And that trusting in something larger than me, maybe it was okay. Now, had the octopus looked at me and said, you know, Natalie, I could use a hand. I'm stuck in this tide pool. I just need a little leg up to get back into the ocean. Could you hook a guy up? That's a different story. That's not a rescue mission. That's support. That's support. That's helping my brother, my little eight-legged brother who's stuck in a tide pool and can't get himself out. Of course I'm going to help. Of course I'm going to give it 100% effort. Because he's a willing partner in his rescue. But the octopus did not clearly want my help. In fact, my help disturbed him greatly. So I think about this role that many of us get caught in of the rescuer. And I think a lot of times when we get caught in a role like the rescuer, we can sometimes very innocently, with good intentions perhaps, end up bullying, which is the last thing on earth we want to do. So I always ask myself now, is it possible for me to allow this person to be exactly as they are and trust that they are exactly who they need to be? And that I can offer support and they can decline or accept, and either answer is 100% fine. It's when we force our will on another person based on our own expectations of how they need to be that we start to do some harm. We start to do some harm. Because when we do not allow people to have the answer of no, no thank you, I don't want your help, I'd like to stay in this tide pool a little while longer, just see what happens. I've never been this hot before, I'm curious about it. If we take away their ability to say no, then we are actually, in fact, taking away a part of their dignity. We have to allow people around us to have the choice of yes or no, or not yet, or maybe, let me think about it. These choices preserve dignity in our lives and in the lives of everyone around us. And there are people that are very happy living life in a way of, you know, some people would call it ignorance or unconsciousness or not awake. And I think sometimes in spiritual communities, we can judge these people, the unawakened ones, as somehow less than, somehow not important or worthy of our compassion. In fact, unable to have the strength to save themselves. And so we have to go rescue them because we know what's best. And that, I think, is when we run into a little bit of a tricky spot. So the question is how can we support people, be compassionate, lend a hand, be of service without being this rescuer bully? And I think there are two key questions that I ask. And, you know, in Dharma School, it's a very collaborative process, and I'm very committed to preserving the dignity and power of each student by giving them choice and not mandating or giving any kind of dogma, but perhaps just presenting legends and theories and options that they then have the free will to choose. And two of my favorite questions are, how can I support you? How can I support you? Would you like my support? Would you like any assistance? And then they have a yes or a no. And if they choose no, I just really need to talk it out. Thanks for listening. That's support. That's enough. That's plenty. Sometimes people just need to stay in the tide pool a little bit longer to sort out their own situation and find their own way out. Or wait for the tide to rise. And it's not up to us to figure out the best path forward always for them. I remember I was one time involved. I had this friend, and she was in some way, this was a long time ago, she was in some way kind of addicted to relationships, and especially relationships with married people. And so she would have these relationships with married people again and again and again, and just suffer these great heartaches at the end. Because often, of course, as that story goes, oftentimes is that, you know, nobody's leaving their spouses, and they're just kind of in this relationship for temporary reasons. And she would find herself heartbroken often. And for a long time, I tried to rescue and tell her and teach her and give her books and give her support and come and pick her up and tell her no and dictate and lecture and tell some more and advice, even though she never asked for any. And one day, I'll never forget, she said to me, "Natalie, can't you just let me do this? Just let me be me. I'm figuring something out." And I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, I can do that. I might actually be a better friend in this moment and be more supportive if I just sit beside you in your heartache and just let that happen. And I can think of another example where I had a friend who was wrestling with a different kind of addiction, one that I know many of you are familiar with. It was one to drugs, to Oxy and different kind of Vicodin, just different painkillers like this, different opiates. And he wrestled. And even though it seemed that there was a part of him that wanted to be saved, there was a part of him that kept choosing to stay in the eddy, the little tide pool of numbing from life's experiences, and really did not want to participate in feeling all of the difficult feelings around being this young man who wanted a family and didn't have a partner and was getting older and not having children. He really wanted those things, and that pain was so difficult to face that the numbing was a better choice for him, and so he continued to choose it. And in that situation, I finally got to a point where I offered support and assistance. And he continued to reject in various different ways. And eventually, we fell out of one another's lives because we didn't have similar goals. We didn't have similar values. I want to feel life. I want to experience the rain, the sun, the joy, the pain. I don't want to be numb for this life. I want to walk out of here when I'm 125 years old saying, I felt it all. I lived it as best as I could, and I was there. I was present for it. And he did not. And sometimes, and this is the hard part, we get to leave people in the tide pool that they have chosen, and it's okay. And the hardest thing to remember is that everyone, you know, in spiritual communities, I always ask students this, you know, they believe and many pray and many do ceremony and they believe in something larger than themselves, that there's a divine order to the cosmos. Many people in spiritual communities, whether they call it Jesus or Allah or Buddha or Mother Earth or the sun or science or whatever, the grand mechanics of the universe, there's a trust in it, most people in spiritual communities. And one of the things that I ask is, if we truly believe that there is some kind of mechanics or divine perfection to this whole game of life, isn't it possible that every single one of us is held by something larger? And the shamans in Peru would often say things like, everything is unfolding in divine perfection, even when we don't understand it. And only the masters trust it completely, because it is a difficult practice to maintain. This idea of that it's all unfolding in perfection, even when it's painful, it's unfolding in perfection. Even when someone else is in pain somehow, this is part of the grand mechanics. And it's difficult. It's difficult to trust in that. And, you know, it's interesting because in some of the yogic scriptures, you know, particularly in the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of my favorite books, I've read it 100 times, and I think that my favorite copy of that book is with someone right now that I lent it to, that I care about very much. And so this book has been passed around to dear, dear people in my life. And I read it over and over and over again. And just so you know, like even Mahatma Gandhi died with the Bhagavad Gita. Oppenheimer, the guy that, you know, did the whole atom bomb situation and created this, carried the Bhagavad Gita with him. So this book is quite, quite impressive, and it's timeless in its wisdom. And it's an ancient Hindu text, part of the Mahabharata. It's a little section of a much larger sacred text called the Mahabharata. But in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the things that that the seeker, who's named Arjuna, discovers is that everything in the cosmos is merely one little fragment, one little splinter of the divine experiencing itself. And so the legend goes that the divine was splintered into 1,000,000,000 fragments. Some of these fragments became planets and the Milky Way and the stars and the blackness in between, the space, the sounds, the trees, the people, the mice, the cats, the paint, the table I'm sitting at, the sound of my voice, your eyes, and that the divine is lingering in all of these things. And that the reason that the divine splintered into so many fragments is because it wanted to experience itself. Isn't that a beautiful legend? So when I see someone who is committed to staying in the tide pool of suffering, I think to myself, ah, there's the divine right there experiencing itself. It's experiencing intense heat. It's experiencing sorrow. It's experiencing heartbreak. It's experiencing hunger. And we can have great compassion for this witnessing of the divine in all of its billions of flavors. And also offer to lift someone out of the suffering if they choose. And also honor the choice to stay. So this is a hard thing, and the only way that I have found out it is to offer support and allow the choice. And this is how we stay out of the drama and the bullying of sometimes being the rescuer. So my question is, are you trying to rescue an octopus who's actually quite satisfied in the nook and cranny that he has chosen? And can you find it in your heart? Is your heart big enough to love even that? You don't have to prove. You don't have to understand. You don't have to stick around. You don't have to stay there. You don't have to be besties, but can you just find compassion for the ones who choose to stay in the tide pool? It is a complete disservice to try to rescue the octopus because the octopus has everything it needs to make its own choice of how it wants to live its life. And to take that choice away is to take away the dignity, to flash its colors of fear and panic until it is depleted of life force. And we don't want to do that. We're here to be of service. We're not here to poke sticks at people and jab them in the eyeball and the squishy bits until they do what we think they need to do. That is not what we're here to do. And that is why I'm so grateful for this little octopus that taught me a very big lesson in a tide pool in Bahia Honda, Florida. So those are my deep thoughts tonight, friends. Don't rescue the octopus. Marvel at their courage. Marvel at their bravery. Offer and let be. May you find peace this evening. And thank you for being here. It's always such a joy to chat with you and to tell stories and explore the different nuances of growth and awakening here on the Nadi Shaman podcast. And I thank you. So thanks for tuning in one last time to Nadi Shaman, where we like to keep the sacred a little bit wild and totally real.
If you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, we are so grateful. Please reach out to us. Let us know what topics you'd like to see covered in our future episodes. Get in touch in the comments because we love to hear from you. And you can reach us on social media.